This is take three of an interview
between
Karen Tudor and the date is the 24th of November 1998. And you were just telling me about the RCMP and the military police response to the unnatural goings on at the rendezvous.
Yeah, they just thought that we were doing unnatural things amongst us air women and army women and navy women, and so they just put us under house arrest. I mean, I can't fathom at all what they thought we were doing. Certainly, we weren't talking about boyfriends. And it was, though, shortly after that. Plus, unfortunately, I have to say, I mean, I guess at the time it really hurt me and disappointed me to know that there was one of us who actually squealed. Hmm. It was a notorious lesbian. I mean, she was sort of known to be. But she'd been in the Air Force for a long time, and she was getting nowhere with promotions and whatnot, and probably because the Canadian Armed Forces would not tolerate homosexuality. And so I think for her to advance at least to a corporal, which was just the next step up, she needed some brownie points, I guess. Mm. And unfortunately, we were it. So we had it on good authority that she was the one who squealed and said that what was happening when we left the base after the ball games, and that we're all going and gathering at this rendezvous. And to take suspicion off herself, she was there that night as well. Hmm. But when we were put under house arrest, the seven of us, she was not included in it. So she was conspicuous by her absence. You know, I mean, my God, we thought, how could they not involve her? Of all people. Then a little bit checking around and, afterward, and we sort of had it on good authority that, she named the seven of us as being lesbians. Mm. But then when we went to Montreal, to Saint-Hubert, and the psychiatrist who was, he seemed to be nuttier than a fruitcake. His report, he had to put in an honest report, and he could not identify any of us as lesbians. Well, I guess we all had the right answers, you know. So that was that. When we got back, we were told that they were going to split us all up and send us elsewhere, and none of us would be on the same base ever again. Mm-hmm. And for Lorraine and Joan, as a couple, they were the only couple out of the seven of us. For them, that wasn't promising. They told us that, we would probably never get promoted, and they'd send us to the worst stations, you know, the isolation stations. So we knew that if we stayed in, it was, we were inviting intimidation, and I remember that Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one can intimidate me without my permission. And had we stayed in, we would have been giving them permission to intimidate us. And so we just five of us decided definitely we were getting out. The other two were younger. They were new in I think they were new in all respects. They were new lesbians. They were new into the Air Force, new to our station. They thought, oh no, we don't want to do this. And we, as the older ones, I mean, my God, I was 21. We were older. But then again, seeing as I was just 15, I mean, I'd already been gay for 6 years, so. Anyway, they, I guess, thought about, we just said, you know, if you want to stay in, lots of luck to you. We in no way encouraged them one way or the other. But they decided that they would get out because I think they had a talk with their superiors. And I think their superiors pretty well told them, you know, you're marked. Mm-hmm. You're marked women. So they ended up getting out with us. So that was it. That was the end of the Air Force. So
you got out before
1962.
Your time. And that was before the time that you'd agreed to do when you signed up was 4 years? 3 years?
3 years.
Three years.
Oh, my time was just up. Like, right. It really coincided.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I got out in August of 62. And I'd only signed on because my 3 years were up. And just a week before we were arrested, I had signed on sort of with the promise that I would sign on for 4 or 5 years if I could get a Metz, France posting. I wanted to go to France, and Metz was the only place we could go as with my trade. So for me, it just coincided that, you know, I really just finished my, I should have been getting out maybe in September, and I got out, it was closer to the end of August. As a matter of fact, the day I arrived in Toronto from the Air Force, when I got out, the day I arrived there, my niece was born that day. So that was August 23rd, 1962, only. And that's the only way I remember that day, because she was born that day. And so that was it. That was my Air Force life over and done with, you know, and I'm now on Civvy Street.
And what did you do for the next 3 years till 65? What, you were working somewhere?
Yeah, I sort of, I went around to various places. I mean, you know, I as a radar person, you know, fighter control operator, I went out to Malton Airport, as it was called in Toronto at that time, and had the audacity to apply to become an air controller, air traffic controller. Well, women can't do that. You know, I mean, you're going to have, once a month, you know, you're going to be off sick because of your period. Jesus. I mean, pardon me for swearing, but when I think of how blatantly discriminating they were at that time, I mean, I should have knocked all of their heads together, you know. Yeah, I just went in and I said, oh, I'm out of the Air Force. And I mean, of course, I knew that that I had an honorable discharge. They couldn't, because, you know, I asked to get out. It wasn't supposed to be on my record, and to the best of my knowledge, it wasn't. But then again, who knows? I mean, there wasn't any disclosure file that they were going to let me read. So I went and tried to get a job, and I was just told flat out, you know, women cannot be air traffic controllers. Mm-hmm. My God, it would be absolute chaos. And my answer to them was, well, you bring them in and out of Malton. Who the hell do you think carries them all over North America? We do. The fighter control operators in the Royal Canadian Air Force are 95% women. 95% women. And I said, you know, women can handle that, to take them all across Canada and hand them over to the United States or hand them over wherever once they're out of our range. But we can't bring them in and out of an airport because of our menstrual cycle.
What did he say?
Well, it's a known fact that women just can't stand any pressure. Can't be under stress. Men can handle stress. So I knew that, you know, I was hitting my head against a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point? And I mean, it was like having just had done to me what had just happened, having seen Lois and those three sort of kicked out, you know, I mean, I this didn't have anything to do with me being a lesbian. It had everything to do with me being a woman. But to me, discrimination is discrimination, you know. So I just decided to back off, because back then, I guess at that tender age, I didn't have enough smarts about me to take anybody to task about anything. I mean, I should have taken the Royal Canadian Air Force to task, and I should have taken the employment people at Malton Airport to task, but I didn't, because I just didn't have my smarts about me. I didn't realize, I guess, how discriminated against, you know, how much I was being discriminated against. So anyway, I then just started looking for factory work, because I didn't know what else I could do. And there was lots of manufacturing companies. And so I got one, and I worked in the storeroom, and it was when I was working in that factory that I met the person that I was going to spend the next 9 years with. And she was a woman who had not been with a woman before. She had divorced when her daughter was less than a year old, and her daughter was now 6 years old, and there was just this strong attraction between the two of us, and it just happened, and that was it.
Mm.
So I was glad I got a job there.
I bet. Well, that's like the mid-60s. Thereabouts?
Was 62.
Still in 62?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a packed year for you.
Yeah. Oh, no. When Gertie and I got together, it was in March of 63. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I worked there for a little while. But, I mean, as soon as I got out of the Air Force, I had to work. So, so I got this job, Modern Containers. They made all the tubes, toothpaste tubes, any kind of extruded tubes, and that's where I met Gertie. So.
And this was in Halifax, or?
No, this was in Toronto.
In Toronto,
yeah.
Right.
Because when I got out of the Air Force, I headed right for Toronto, and so did Lorraine and Joan. And one of the ones, there were seven of us, and one of the ones who got out with me, her name was Joan. So there was two Joans. And this Joan and I at the time that we were arrested and everything, she and I didn't have anything going on between us. But after we got back from that, oh no, it was actually when we were up in Montreal.
Pretending you weren't.
She had an aunt there, because we were all broke. And we were there without civvies, and we were under house arrest. But the our female officer who accompanied us, she wouldn't tell us why we were under arrest. So therefore, we challenged her, and she couldn't. I went to somebody else, the Air Force police there, and I said, can we be under house arrest without a charge? And they said, absolutely no way. So I was able to tell her, screw you, honey, we're going into town. We're leaving the base. So, and Lorraine and Joan didn't go up to Montreal with us. They were away on holidays, so they came up the next day. We were able to get a hold of them and have them go to each of our lockers and pick us out our finest butch clothes. You know, man-tailed shirts and slacks that you could cut your finger on the crease. It was so sure. Penny loafers, white socks. I mean, you know. So for each of us, they brought one change of civilian clothes. And so we went to town, went down to Montreal and, you know, that type of thing. But we didn't have an awful lot of money, so Joan went and borrowed money from this aunt that she had there. And then while we were partying, somehow Joan and I ended up getting together. So when we were leaving, and I said I was going to Toronto, because I had lived there for 3 years before I joined the Air Force, when we were going, Joan wanted to then come with me. So we went to Toronto, sort of as partners. But it wasn't... She didn't want to go home. She was from Nova Scotia. And she just didn't want to go home to her parents. And she wanted to go to Toronto. So we did go as a couple, but... It was just not we were lovers, but we weren't really a couple, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It was a convenience. Mm-hmm. Convenience for both of us. You know, because shortly after we got there, then Lorraine and Joan came after they cleared up their matters. Lorraine was from New Brunswick, and Joan was from Nova Scotia. But and when they cleared up their matters there, and they were a couple, so they came, and the four of us shared an apartment together, a basement apartment. Mm-hmm. And I was still with Joan, or Joan was still with me. We were still together when I met Gertie. Mm-hmm. And so when I told Joan that I had met somebody, she packed up and went back to Nova Scotia and ended up getting married, probably having a dozen kids or whatever. But she was unsure, you know, whether she wanted to be Arthur or Martha. And also that was okay, you know. I don't think any of us really knew what we wanted. I knew, in my own mind, that I probably would never ever be with a man. So in that sense, I was okay. But because of the stigmatism attached to being gay. People like Joan had a problem dealing with it. So
were you calling yourself gay by this point, or using any other?
No, I don't think. No, certainly not lesbian. Mm. Lesbian was a word that came in much later. Mm. I don't think so. Mm. I guess I probably still thought that gay meant happy.
And it does.
And it does. Yeah, but yeah. At that time, mm-hmm. I thought that's all it meant. Mm-hmm. Hey, Joshua. It's okay, babe.
So were you, when you went back to Toronto, were you going to any of the clubs or the bars in the early 60s? Did you start socializing in that way?
Actually, yeah, when Joan and Lorraine and Joan and I first got to Toronto, or after Joan and Lorraine came, then we started to try and find some bars. I mean, we knew that they were there. So one of them was the Continental, and the other was the music room. Sarah Dunlop operated the music room, and so we went there. The 511 was a place for drag shows. It was for the guys. Charlie's, St. Charles, was for guys. Letros was for guys. There weren't any places for women other than going in to the Continental and the gay women in there were just so tough. Oh my God, you know, I mean, it's like, I guess we were just so innocent. We just couldn't believe. I mean, you'd go in there and you'd sit with your back to the wall, and you know, so many things happened. There are lots of fights there again, you know. Always bothered me why people needed to fight, you know, breaking bottles and like quart beer bottles, smacking them open and holding them up to one another's. And I guess it was because, you know, I had experienced the physical abuse at the hands of a woman that, you know, I just thought, why the hell do we have, you know, why does this have to happen? So, but we went to them. But then when I got together with Gertie, my life completely, completely changed. I didn't go to parties. I hardly saw Lorraine and Joan anymore. I became a homebody. Hmm. We lived just outside of Toronto, just east of Toronto, in a place called Pickering. And it wasn't that far away from Scarborough. Like, it just bordered on to Scarborough. And she lived there with her mother and her daughter. And then I ended up moving in there. Mm-hmm. And our 9 years together, we lived most of the 9 years in Pickering. The last couple of years, we had moved into Toronto, in Scarborough. But I didn't go out and socialize or anything because I was then a homebody. But also, money was a big issue with us. Mm. It was a real big issue with us. We didn't have an awful lot of it. We had her mother and her daughter to support. So there was the two of us working, and so I took, as well as working the day job, I also took a job at nighttime and on the weekends at the Odeon Bay Ridge's Drive-In Theater as a cashier. Hmm. So I worked 6 nights a week and 5 days a week.
Wow.
So you can well imagine that sort of took me right out of circulation. So my one day off, which was a Sunday that I was off the whole day, so my one day off, there was no way that I wanted to go anywhere or see anybody. So I tried to keep in touch with people like Lorraine, and I did keep in touch, but not an awful lot, you know. And it wasn't until We moved into town sort of thing that we, like, we didn't have. We went from owning a house. I mean, it was mortgage mansion. That's why we didn't have two pennies to rub together, because we were spending all our money on mortgage payments and whatnot. But we were trying to do all these things. And so we, I guess it was probably about 68, 69, or even 70 before I started to get back with meeting, like, you know, seeing Lorraine, and she wasn't with Joan anymore, but they were friends, and they each had different partners at that point, and Gertie at that point was working evenings, and it left my evenings free, mm-hmm. because her daughter was now that much older, and so the whole thing, you know, was it was my life then took another change. But when I first got together with Gertie, it took a change where I was almost I was really closeted, mm-hmm. and you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about that. It's just that I didn't have that communication. I didn't go to bars or anything like that. We just couldn't afford it.
Right.
And we didn't even go to house parties, because most of the time we couldn't afford that either. She couldn't go to the house party without taking booze, and we just couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. So, once they opened the Blue Jay in Toronto, and then there was also some dances held up at the Dufferin Hotel, and also down on Queen Street. And so when those three, first it was a Blue Jay, and after that it was the one on Dufferin, and after that it was the one down on Queen Street. Then I became more and more involved, and then I got to meet a lot of women, you know. So, and that, but that was taking me up well past 1965.
Sure.
Well past.
I think
so, but that's it as far as, you know, I mean I've covered covered 65.
I have a few questions about physical stuff and then we're done.
Okay.
Earlier on you talked about the first time with Ruth and everything, and I was wondering, before the 70s, before everything that happens in the 70s, did your physical relationships change in any way in terms of quality or in terms of preference for particular things, or did that develop, or were most of the relationships sort of pretty fulfilling generally, or?
Well, to be quite honest, Karen, while I was with Ruth, I think whatever we did, which was simply mutual masturbation, I think we got a certain amount of satisfaction from it, but I certainly knew in the 3 years I was with her, I knew absolutely nothing about an orgasm, about the pleasures that entails. So that was, it was like in my sexual being was in its infancy. I mean, because I was, it happened while I was 15 to 18. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I guess I was still growing. Then, when I got together with and with Joan, the time that we were together, we'd make love to one another, but there wasn't anything sort of earth shattering with it. And with Gertie and I, for the 9 years that we were together, we were quite satisfied, I guess. Mm. It wasn't actually until I was with Bev that I guess I experienced, you know, the full gamut, you know, the whole thing. It, I would say that that it was the early 70s before that happened to me. So
was that because of her, or did you have a from outside or from things that you've been reading a greater sense of what?
I hadn't read anything even up to that point, even when Bev and I got together. So, you know, but Bev, for all intents and purposes, is not in this picture because she's after 65. But I still didn't know that there was material to be read, you know? I mean, I didn't know about the way.
You were just talking about how you hadn't read anything by the time you got together with Bev.
No, the material wasn't available. And I think it's because we were so much hidden in the closet, everybody. It was very, very difficult to meet people or to know about these books or anything like that, unless you were part of these groups, like maybe the ones at the music room. Or, but you see, I didn't I wasn't friends with them. I would go to these places with friends. I'd stay with my friends while we were there, and then we'd leave. So, you know, we didn't know that you could buy Ann Bannon books or anything like that. I mean, it was years after when I discovered all these things. So for me, certainly while I was in the Air Force, I knew nothing about literature or anything. And as far as, you know, sexual intimacies, I guess I was quite satisfied because I didn't know any different. And I'm not knocking that out either. Mm-hmm. Like it was, as I say, I was quite satisfied. And so was my partner at the time. I guess what I'm saying is that we weren't adventurous at all, you know, for whatever reason. You know, so
when that chemistry happened with Bev, was she more experienced, or was it just that there was some kind of chemistry between you that pushed you beyond, or
I would say it was our chemistry. I suppose maybe she was a little. No, we just, I guess we just became more adventurous, you know. There were no boundaries. And maybe we just experimented with one another. With Gertie, then, my 9 years with Gertie, we had an active lovemaking throughout the whole 9 years. You know, there wasn't a problem there, you know. While I was working two jobs, that may have been a problem. So I was tired. So there wasn't a lot of lovemaking at that time, but that was understandable. Mm-hmm. And I guess obviously quite all right. So that's it. So
Well, just one more question.
Okay.
So in all of those years before you did become familiar with the words gay or lesbian, was there, when you thought about your attraction to women, what word would you have applied in those days? How did you sort of think about yourself when you were thinking, well, gee, you know, I'm actually more attracted to women than I am to men? Was it phrased in those terms, or was there some kind of word that you used or phrase?
No. No. No, I just knew that I had what I thought was a natural attraction, but I knew in my mind and in my heart that it was an unnatural attraction because nobody else would see it that way, so therefore it was I don't know what to compare it to, but I was comfortable with myself. I was never ever, I must say, at no time during my life was I ever ashamed of being a lesbian, whether I knew I was a lesbian or not. Even as a young child and having just adoring Miss McDonald, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. It was just, that was me, you know. So when I was attracted to women in later life, it didn't bother me, but I was quite aware that it bothered everybody else. And, sort of the proof was coming all too often to me, the girls getting kicked out of the Air Force and with what I went through and in Toronto, the sort of the witch hunts that were going on in there, and by 69 when Stonewall happened, I mean, like more and more and more, I became familiar with, how people would, as far as I was concerned, they'd want to tar and feather you, because you were sick. But I never considered myself sick. I enjoyed just being who I am.
That seems like a good note to end on. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.